from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
So here's Jesse's, you know, point aside. Does Bill Belichick as the coach make the San Francisco 49ers better?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think as a coach, they would be better. Like, if you got Kyle and him together.
Champions of the world.
Right. Yeah. They'd be better. But I don't think he's better than Kyle Shanahan right now. It's always tough to tell, because when I pull back to the time when Brady wasn't there, the roster wasn't as good as the 49ers, right? Mm-hmm. So I can't just be like, oh, see, when Brady wasn't there, he wasn't good. They didn't have as good a team. Maybe with the same talent that Kyle Shanahan has, maybe he would do the same, if not better. But we just don't know. I look at it right now, I just think Kyle is the truth. I mean, and TC aside, listen to the way that players talk about Kyle Shanahan, the reverence they talk about, you know, what he does on the offensive end and all this other stuff. That's what I always go back to. Right? The players will always say something slick on a podcast, an interview, at any time nowadays. I haven't seen a lot of, if any, players come out and say anything other than positive things about Kyle Shanahan in their time with him, whether they're still there or not.
Kyle's set the next four seasons with the 49ers, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I think no matter what happens this year, too.
Yeah, his seat is not even remotely.
No.
Like, even if they, to me, don't even win the Super Bowl, if they're getting to the playoffs year after year, I still feel like he's just here now.
And I think both things can be true. I don't think you have to pick one or the other. But what he did with Brock Purdy his first year is incredible. Like, that was your last pick in the draft and your third string quarterback. And you didn't miss a beat. That's a testament to the team for sure. But we're talking about Chicago earlier. Chicago's looking for a quarterback. Everyone thinks that Chicago's really good. You had the Rams. We're really good. We're a championship team. We need to make a switch at quarterback. They made a switch at quarterback and won a Super Bowl. Like, that position is so important to getting to the ultimate destination. The fact that you lost the first two on your depth chart and got where you wanted to go has, well, pretty damn close,
right?
Before you lost the third guy on the depth chart, right. Changed a lot about the way I think about Kyle Shanahan. And there shouldn't, especially given the fact that Kyle's still really young, there should be no question he is the coach of the San Francisco 49ers for a very long time.
He doesn't have the Super Bowl yet. I don't know if he will get it or whatever, just because, like, this year's going to be tougher and all that. But I feel like he's at Andy Reid status. Like, it's just more so he's the coach of our team till maybe something goes completely wrong.
I agree, but I agree, unfortunately, with the Andy Reid in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I believe.
Yeah, like I agree that like he's Andy Reid.
Yeah, you can take your pick at either. Or Andy Reid in Philly works.
Yeah, he's Andy Reid in Philly because there was a point where it was just like, all right, like there's no question Andy Reid was still a great coach,
right?
But all right, it's not happening here, so let's just all go in a different direction. And Andy was unemployed for like 7.5 seconds. And, you know, now he's won a couple of Super Bowls. He's coaching the greatest quarterback of all time, who he recognized, by the way, where Alex Smith, a guy whose career he helped completely revamp, is having the best year of his career.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's done.
Yeah.
We're going to the kid next year. No, it doesn't. No, that's great. Hey, Alex Smith, best year of it. No, it's fine. We're going to that guy next year. And he wasn't wrong.
Ironically, it didn't work out the same way per se. It ended up getting to that spot, but that's kind of what Kyle Shanahan did with Jimmy. He was like, no, Jimmy's going to be the starter here this first year, Trey's here. Then the second year, it's going to be Trey's job. I don't care about
that. And then it's not, and it's going to be Brock Purdy's. We're going to get both of these jackasses out of here.
Jimmy coming back that one year was always so weird.
Now, Kyle hates Jimmy Garoppolo, right? Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure.
That was pretty much awkward, I feel
No, he absolutely hates. He does not like that man.
No. But, hell, look what he did with him under center.
Yeah, absolutely. And look at what he looked like under another coach.
That's the thing. That's crazy.
Hell, Jimmy Garoppolo, the Raider years, might be Kyle Shanahan's best testament as a head coach.
Bro, he went from highest paid quarterback in the league to Nathan Peterman.
Man.
I mean, he looks awful. And I was you guys can pull up the tape today and all that. I'm a big Jimmy supporter. I thought Jimmy was a good quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was solid even without a Kyle Shanahan. Dead wrong on that.
Fast forward to Raider highlights. Turns out he stinks.
He's not good enough at all.
And Raider fans hate that guy too, I feel.
You know what's funny too? Because this all started with a conversation about Bill Belichick. Remember, he sent Jimmy Garoppolo to Kyle Shanahan for what was it, a third round pick. Oh, man, what a guy. Kyle's like, this guy's ass. Bill's like, this guy sucks. Yeah. I'll do it for you, Kyle. I wouldn't do it for anybody else. I'd do it for you. They get that pick. This guy sucks.
Man, he's terrible.
Wait till they get a load of this goof.
You know what? The crazy thing about Jimmy Garoppolo, though, is you can probably literally trace it back to the ACL injury. He's two different quarterbacks. He was like...
Well, we didn't really know, though, did we?
Well, we saw maybe 8 games because he had the 2 games with New Orleans or New England, and then he got hurt, and then five, six, seven with the 49ers because he got hurt week 3.
Okay.
And he just was different. Like, he was there, and he came back, and he was just never the same. At least it looked like. Like, he was confident. It was almost like not that this guy is bad now. He's still great, doing great things. But it's almost watching Luka in the bubble and Luka today. Like how we did that
video he was watching. Yeah.
It's like, look at Jimmy. He's commanding the offense. Yeah. Look at the throws. And he just
Luka
he looks finished after that.
Quick.
Yeah. Luka was looking like John Morant in the bubble. Yeah.
You imagine how different the Niners' fortunes change if Jimmy doesn't get hurt against Miami? Like, he just plays out the rest of the season. Trey's probably still the starter
Trey's
the next year.
There. Yeah, Trey is probably there. Brock never gets an opportunity unless Kyle sees something in training camp and in practice to make him want to make that change. Yeah. Yeah, and it's clear as day now. It's so crazy because it's clear as day now. Brock Purdy is so much better than both of those two.
It's not close.
He is so much better. Poor Trey. He threw another pick right at the defender. Did you see that clip?
I didn't see it, no.
Did you hear Brock's explanation for interceptions in training camp?
Yeah.
I don't hate it.
I figured
that
because I've heard people talk about that before in training camp.
Well, don't make faces when Trey throws interceptions in Dallas, then.
There's levels to this.
Well, maybe he's experimenting.
But you got to get it right. You don't have many experiments left.
That's what Brock says. It's time to experiment.
I don't know, man.
Maybe Trey's like, I'm going to try. Let me get my bag.
The difference with that, obviously,
and there's a million differences.
We see. No, I was gonna say, I saw Trey's interceptions. I didn't see Brock's interceptions in the, and I just heard him, and it sounded like, oh, he was trying to push it downfield and undercut.
Nah, buddy, just throw a pass. Like, you haven't thrown a pass in 9 years. Just throw a freaking pass.
Go ahead and hit a CD on this little bubble screen right here.
Bro, you were taking Algebra 2 the last time you played a full season.
I wonder, I'm still not ready to close the book on Trey. I'm not.
Good for you.
I'm not.
Good for you. I closed mine and took it back to the library.
I think he'll start in the UFL before he does the NFL.
I'm not, man. I have no evidence towards this at this point either, but I just...
Well, there's no evidence either way. It was all... Trey Lance was drafted off vibes.
He didn't even play the year before, right?
The man didn't play football.
It's been 50-50. I'm thinking about the times we've seen him. It's been 50-50.
No. I'm talking about before.
Oh,
I'm not talking about with Dallas. I'm talking about prior to San Francisco drafting him.
Yeah, no, he didn't. I mean,
Bill Barnwell had a great analogy. I just can't remember what it was. I just remember, he was talking about a guy at the gym,
uh-huh.
And how a guy at the gym is, he's wakes up, he gets on the treadmill, like, I'm on the treadmill, and I feel good. And then one day he goes, you know what? I'm going to try CrossFit. And he goes and does CrossFit and goes, I don't like this. I'm going to go back to a treadmill. He used that analogy to describe Kyle Shanahan in the quarterback situation.
That's a good one.
Trey Lance was the CrossFit. He's like, I'm going to try something different. Jimmy and Brock are the treadmill.
Yeah.
And he tried that CrossFit and was like, man, this is not for me, and went back to his good old handy treadmill.
Brock might.
I thought that was a good analogy.
That is a good one. Brock might be like the new treadmill, like where those guys are running, like
one of them Peloton treadmills.
Yeah,
you would know.
Well, I don't have a Peloton treadmill. I don't know what this guy's talking about. I don't know what he's talking about.
You got a Peloton bike. You got the mountains in front of you when you ride. You can ride and you can look at the mountains
in a couple months. I'm with the whole, you know, I've revamped. I'm working out again a little bit. I'm definitely going to get that back into it because, first of all, it's a good tool. Second of all, the membership comes out of my account every month. So if I got to bike up the Mount Eves, that's what's going to happen.
I can't lie. That's one of my biggest motivators for working out, too. I'm paying for it.
Yeah.
Might as well go out there.
This is what I was going to say about Bill Belichick, too, in that situation.
What situation again?
With Jimmy.
Media.
What was the story? Tom Brady wanted Jimmy out of there?
Yeah, the story was Tom Brady wanted Jimmy gone, so he went to Kraft.
Didn't Jimmy get locked out of the TB12 facility too, or something like that?
Oh my God!
Am I misremembering that?
No. You're not. He didn't get locked out. It's his. They gave him a facility.
No, I mean they stopped letting Jimmy go. Like Tom Brady was so like
beefing
with, like whatever. He was just so fed up with him. Like, yeah, no, you're not coming here anymore.
Missed that.
I have to look that up. I might be mixing stories together or something like that.
I don't even think they had the facility back then, but let's try. Jimmy G get locked out of TB12? That should be generic enough to find.
Like you said, I might be mixing that up with a letter.
Nope, no, doesn't look like you are.
Let's go.
It does not look like you are.
That's producer points right there.
Let's see. Perhaps the most... Jimmy Garoppolo was reportedly locked out of a TB12 facility.
Yikes.
After Garoppolo was knocked out of his second start because of a shoulder injury, he set up a visit at TB12. As he later told Patriot staffers when he arrived, the door was locked. He knocked. Nobody was there. He called TB12 trainers, but nobody answered. He couldn't believe it. Garoppolo told the staffers, and that night ended up visiting team trainers instead. Guerrero, who you might remember is Tom Brady's trainer, vehemently denies ever refusing to see any player, and Garoppolo was eventually treated at TB12, but it was 2 weeks after he showed up for his original appointment, and only after a high-ranking Patriots staffer called TB12 to inquire why Garoppolo hadn't been admitted.
It's essentially mom said, crazy. Mom said, you got to let me hang out with you.
That's wild, man. That is wild. Damn, Jimmy.
I forgot about that. That's
Tom
tremendous.
Brady's hella petty, I guess.
Well, how about Jimmy, that. Though, like becoming a star and reaching out to his favorite actress? So I want to take you on a date.
Stephen A. Smith lived off of that one for a little while.
Jimmy said, hey, I'm a star. I'm going to take her out on a date.
Is Jimmy G like the, I don't want to be rude when I say this about him too, not least talented, but just more so he was the guy for a couple seasons or whatever, but just more so like he wasn't like Tom Brady or anything like that. Like, is he like just the least?
He was super popular.
Yeah.
He was very, very popular.
Jimmy.
Yeah.
Is he like the least?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Is talented to ever like hit that status?
Nah, Minshew.
I don't know that Gardner Minshew hit that status, but guys like Trey Wingo love that dude.
Gardner Minshew?
Yeah. I mean, they love Jimmy. Jimmy had a lot going for him. He looked like the heir apparent to Tom Brady. He played for, you know, a dynasty that was still happening.
Right.
You couldn't get one report on him without them talking about his looks. Like, he was a good looking dude. And
like I said, he was just a different quarterback after that injury.
Uncle
like,
Looney.
The original injury against Cleveland.
No, or, against Kansas City towards ACL.
Kansas City, okay.
Yeah.
Uncle Looney threw Tebow's name in the chat. I don't know if he was ever the guy, but the media
Oh, Tebow.
Thing he got was insane.
Tebow was the guy, whether we liked it or not.
Yeah.
Whether we liked it or not, he was the dude.
That's a good name right there.
Matt George joins us. We'll talk about whatever Matt wants to talk about, but definitely about some of his recent episodes of Locked On Kings, because he's had some good ones. If you're not subscribing, go check it out. And he'll join us next here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Back here with our buddy Matt George of the Locked On Kings podcast. Matt was in the chat earlier. He was very eager to talk about wrestling, but
Go ahead. I saw something else.
I got a text from our friend who's in Paris.
Oh,
would you like to guess what that text said? America,
I don't want to guess.
Survives a victory. I read the last one to you. Went from the last game.
Yeah.
Today's text, this is a shoot, and I can show it to you if you don't believe me. This is the text that I just received, likely from the bus ride in Paris. Is New Day still the best tag team? I swear to God, that's the text I just got.
What?
They're just like us.
Is New Day still the best tag team? I was like, well, they're not really together anymore, but... I don't know.
So I don't know. This may not even be a radio conversation that we could have or anything like that. It may just be personal between the two of us. I want to know who was asking these questions.
Yeah, I'm curious.
And who they think is, like, for instance, does the best player in the world say no? New Day? Is the conversation happening with the best player in the world? I need to know. I need to know.
Also, no one can ever say anything to us about talking wrestling again, because it's clearly a national, worldwide thing.
Where would they, like, who, Matt, who's the greatest tag team of all time? Is it New Day?
Ooh.
I mean, it's New Day.
I think it's the Usos.
And the Usos, right? Yeah. Like, that's the legit, like.
I think, Usos are up there. I always want to mix tag teams and factions together, so I always have to keep the factions out of it. I think the Usos would be my pick.
Yeah, I think so too. But it's one and two, and I don't think you're wrong if you say one.
Their Hell in a Cell match was New Day versus Usos. Hell in a Cell match was one of the best matches that people don't talk about. It was such a good match.
Tell our buddy you think it's the Usos now. And see what they say and see what's going on. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's the Usos.
I love that we say
once again. I don't know if the best player in the world will be him. Maybe she'll come on the show and disagree with us live.
Well, I've part of me hopes. Like, I really just like, I wish I could FaceTime her, but that wouldn't do anything for the. It might be the
because does she have an opinion?
I don't know.
I'm assuming she's like listening to a conversation.
I have no idea.
But she may have an
opinion.
She may know these things.
I don't know. But the idea of the women's national team discussing wrestling on their way home is just terrific.
Bro, they could be listening right now trying to figure out the answer. Like honestly.
It's just the best. Are you excited for SummerSlam weekend? I know you are. I know you are.
This card is loaded. And this is the first time that there's probably three or four storylines happening at the same time that I'm super invested in. Cause even going back to Mania, it was Cody and versus Bloodline. Like that was all pretty much I or anybody cared about. I think Drew McIntyre is the biggest star in WWE right now. I think he's absolutely killing it. He versus Punk with Rollins getting involved is phenomenal. I think the Liv Morgan, Rhea Ripley with Dom in the middle angle is super good. And I'm completely invested in that. Of course, there's still the old Bloodline, and there's a lot of people that believe Roman's making an appearance because it's SummerSlam, but we'll have to wait and see with that. Like, there are a lot of different angles. I mean, even I don't really care too much about Damian Priest versus Gunther, but they have a good amount of heat. So I think there's interest in that as well. I'm very invested. I think there's so much of this card that could be the main event, and I'm psyched for it. I can't wait.
Maybe I'm just not as tapped in right now because I haven't, I see highlights. I haven't watched any of the shows in a couple weeks. But while we all thought this would be where Roman comes back, it doesn't feel like there's buzz right
they've
now.
They've dropped hints that like it kind of you kind of sit up straight like, all right, is this it? But yeah, the buzz isn't there, which is good. Like they're leaving breadcrumbs, uh-huh. right? I think that's what they're doing. They're leaving breadcrumbs, but there's no flat out.
Well, I say that because it feels like it ain't happening. It feels like it'd be more Royal Rumble now.
Oh, that's tough because that like how do you set up for Mania in such a short period?
I don't know.
You might have a couple of stories to tell before you get to Mania with Roman Reigns. Mm. That's a long break too.
Yeah.
What is he, John Cena?
Do they have to set something up for Survivor Series too? Like maybe with the Bloodline or whatever?
No, because I think everyone's got that Bloodline versus Bloodline story. And I think that has to develop. Like if Roman walks out tonight, don't walk out with the Usos.
Mm.
Like tell that story over the next few weeks or months or whatever to where, you know, first he gets Jay back. And then I don't think Jimmy's hurt. I think Jimmy just went away. Then you get Jimmy back. Now you got the Usos. Obviously, you got Paul by your side. So you have that kind of original version of the Bloodline. And then you get around that January marker. And that's when you know who comes back.
Mm.
Mm. And gets involved however he's going to with his stupid championship belt that he walks around with like it's real. I think I'm turning on The Rock, to be honest with you.
I think I'm turning on The Rock. This is crazy.
Giving a lot of pump, 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 pump. Like he's doing that. He's in that era right now.
No, he really kind of is.
Yeah.
He kind of is.
Yeah.
I think he's, but that's the point. I think he's leaning so heavily into the gimmick of him being just this final boss that it's obnoxiously. No,
that he's going to appear on Fox News.
Yeah, no, I think this is real life.
No, I think I have actually turned on The Rock.
I was thinking more of the character, not the political.
Well, the character is working. I just really hate that stupid belt. That, like, part of me, like, I haven't heard like a lot of negative things about The Rock, like dealing with The Rock, working with The Rock and all of that. But I do like he is essentially to a certain degree like a boss now.
Mm.
Like he doesn't own the company. But
he's like in board meetings and stuff.
Well, and which isn't uncommon. He is. He's a board member. But like the owner, Ari Emanuel, that's been his agent for years. Mm. If he wants Triple H gone, he could theoretically fire Triple H. Like he has like that high of a level. So part of me wonders, like, all right, Rock, are we willing looking out for everybody's best interest here? What are we doing? But maybe to Matt's point, that's the brilliance of the character.
Did you watch the YouTube like documentary behind the scenes of WrestleMania, the WrestleMania build that they put out, that WWE put out?
I did.
Because that shed some really good light, too, on now it could be Rock taking advantage of the opportunity or Dwayne taking advantage of the opportunity to once again look like the good guy a little bit. But, I mean, he made sure to emphasize in that documentary that he saw the reaction and was like, oh, we got to pivot. We got to go back to Cody and we got to get me to go heel a little bit. So, I mean, WWE is just in a phenomenal place, and it's not Rock that gets the credit for it. It's Hunter. It's Triple H. I mean, he's just put the WWE in such a position to where so many different storylines matter, so much different talent matters. And I mean, it doesn't, even with Cody as the guy and he's in your face all the time, he's not the only reason you tune in to watch, like when Cena was the guy for so long.
He feels like Cena, to be honest with you right now.
Cody?
Yeah, not in terms of longevity, but the way they're positioning him, like he is the ultra super babyface guy who's doing, he's bringing kids into the ring to celebrate, and he's doing all of that different stuff. Like there's heavy John Cena vibes. That not that there's bad, because he went through 4 years of, you know, evil Roman Reigns. Right. That like, hey, we're going to do something a little bit different here, and like there's nothing wrong with it, except that it's going to get tiresome at some point. and you didn't do it with John, which is okay.
Yeah.
But at some point with Cody, you might have to
make
that switch.
As you're saying this, I was just about to say, I'm kind of ready for the tail turn.
Yeah, it's too early.
I know it's not happening now, but that's what I'm looking forward to with Cody next, whenever it happens.
Who do you get him to turn on? Like, who is the baby face that's forcing Cody to turn? Doesn't exist yet.
I got one. I just need him to make it. Is Punk.
Punk making Cody turn and Punk remaining the babyface is tough for me to get behind.
No, I get it.
Punk is the guy with the mouth.
No, I get it. Pause, but I get it. I just don't. But like, who's the second biggest star? Like, if it's Roman and Cody, like, and we'll put them at, who's next?
I don't think
it's Punk.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I think the guy, Punk is a good one. It might be
now.
Him.
It's easier to turn Punk heel, but like they love CM Punk.
I was gonna say Seth.
Seth's already the slimy bad guy, though. He's done it so many times. Done. Like it's not gonna have the same impact.
He was just a heel. He needs to have a baby face that's so baby face that Cody can turn.
Right. Seth was a heel right before WrestleMania, wasn't he? Like he was a heel tweener ish.
Yeah,
like
that's what I'm saying. Like,
but he's not.
They can't turn Seth heel now. Like they just I think they've tried.
I disagree.
I don't know. I think they tried. People love the song. People go crazy.
Well, they do go crazy for the song.
I think they've tried. I think they've tried in the last two years, and he just gets too much of a pop.
I mean, is Cena going for belt number 17? Maybe you do it that way.
And Cody turns on him?
Yeah, WrestleMania. They could do a little want to shake hand. Like Cena wants to shake his hand after, then Cody beats his ass.
And gives him the old Chris Jericho to Shawn Michaels.
I love that.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I love that, actually. That's the only thing that makes any remote sense.
That's a good call.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's a good call.
All right. Mm. All right.
Beat the bald spot off him.
I just want Punk to make it through this weekend healthy. That is literally all I want. Mm. Like, just come on, buddy. Just make it a couple pay-per-views. Don't get hurt. Because at some point, it's going to be like, man, just stop doing this. Do something else. Matt, since we're talking wrestling, we'll use wrestling terms. We were putting you over earlier talking about the podcast. In the midst of the slowest time of year, man, you have had some gems of podcast recently. You kind of hipped us to this one right before it dropped, but you shared... as the best you could, pieces of a conversation you had with an assistant coach who talked about the Sacramento Kings, the DeMar DeRozan acquisition, and how important and how beneficial that's going to be for the two squads. And then, as KC pointed out, you did a podcast about breaking down what is a successful season for the Sacramento Kings and how just getting to the playoffs isn't going to be enough.
Yeah, so I was listening to your guys' conversation on the way in, and initially, I was thinking, like, success and failure feels too black and white just at this point with how stacked the West is. And just, like, it can the line between success and failure is super blurred and not as solid as people would like to think it is. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like on this entire topic, as I was listening to Kenny talk about it and put up a case of why it's not a failure so eloquently, I realized that I'm not fence sitting anymore. I'm actually falling into the, I think it is a failure. Mm. I think it is a failure to a significant extent because ultimately the whole story matters in this scenario. And if you are the Sacramento Kings, regardless of the circumstance, right, this is you guys were bringing up a bunch of different scenarios and what if they get swept or what if they win 53 games or whatever the case may be. First off, I think we should be looking at this season as a whole through the scope of win total more than playoff seeds. I think just breaking that 50 win threshold should be the expectation or goal for this Kings squad. And I think the playoffs seamlessly come with that, but making it to the playoffs and losing in the first round again means essentially over the course of 2 years, you treaded water. And over the course of those 2 years, De'Aaron's contract is starting to run out. Domas's contract is kicked in, but both those guys are getting older. You're now going into the next year where DeMar DeRozan is 36 years old. You're banking on either Monty making another move, which he has his assets still to do that, mm-hmm. or you're putting all your faith in Keegan and, I guess, Devin Carter to make that big difference. Now, there is a chance that they could. And that would be great. I think we all would love to see, even with DeMar DeRozan here, Keegan Murray make a really big leap next season. And apparently, like, Deuce and Moe brought this to my attention yesterday because I didn't realize it. ESPN, I guess, like, GMs and scouts or whatever, somebody, like, they did a poll on what the worst move of the offseason was, and mm-hmm. so many had the Kings trading for DeMar DeRozan is a bad move, and for a number of reasons. And one of the reasons was, like, what does it do to Keegan Murray? I think that's silly. I think Keegan is more than capable of making the big jump still this year with DeMar DeRozan on the team. And if he doesn't, that's fine, because he doesn't have to anymore, like it felt like last year. But going back to kind of my original point, as I try and tie these thoughts together, like, to me, if you go through another season, regardless of your win total, regardless of your seeding, wherever you end up, now, if you're the eighth seed going against the number one seed, we shouldn't expect them to win a playoff series. But I would argue, if you're the eighth seed and you just barely got into the playoffs via the play-in like you couldn't do last season, are we really feeling better about that? Are we really feeling good about that? And now you're in a position where you're looking around going, how much better realistically can we expect to get? 2 years ago, when they made the playoffs for the first time, it's like, this is new, this is exciting, this is a new group. Domas hadn't gotten his extension yet. Like, okay, let's see where this team can go. At that point, it'll be almost three years ago. When we get to these upcoming playoffs, it'll be 2-3 years in the rearview mirror. Like, the clock is ticking a little bit. The Kings aren't on a timeline as much as the Suns or the Clippers or the Lakers or the Warriors are, so they're not in panic mode necessarily. But I think it's hard to imagine the Kings doing something this season and their ceiling being exponentially higher than this year based off of the team that they have and how much better that team can, in theory, get, if that makes sense.
Okay. Not an epiphany. A thought. I want to see what you guys have to say. Because what Matt says, everything makes perfect sense. I understand it. Now I think about what's next, right? So if you get to that scenario where you've got these guys and you lose in the first round or whatever, mm-hmm. people consider it a failure. And you're like, all right, well, how much more can you need? What can you do with these guys? It feels like the next logical step would be you have to look at changing the core.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. that's a conversation. Yep. People, and when I talk about the core, I'm yep. talking about two people. I'm talking about you. If you don't feel like with DeRozan, Sabonis, Murray, and maybe I guess three, maybe Murray could be in there. But with Fox and all these guys, and you're like, yo, the ceiling is just, we've reached the ceiling, like, we can't.
Well, that's four. I think you just named four people. Five, who's the core?
I don't think DeMar is, you're not moving DeMar.
Okay, so we're talking Fox
first,
and Sabonis.
First, I was going to say Fox and Sabonis.
Yeah.
But I think in that case, you might have to add Keegan to that, too.
That's too where I think it is. Malik is the core, but I also don't think he's a guy where, this isn't working, we got to get rid of Malik Monk.
Exactly.
That's not
right.
Really.
And I don't know, people...
Are you ready to have those conversations? Yeah. Is what you're saying? Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and taking that a step further too, Kenny. Let's say the Kings make the playoffs and our first round playoff exit again. Again, context is important, but if the Kings are losing in the playoffs again, there's probably a lot of people once again ringing the DeMontis Sabonis alarm bell, depending upon how he performs.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, you have De'Aaron Fox with a massive max contract extension looming, mm-hmm. and De'Aaron starts thinking, "Can I get it done here?" And the Kings start thinking, can we get it done with De'Aaron? Mm. So now, again, you're opening a door to, in theory, like, I you think back to, because we do this with everything, we compare this version of the Kings to the Kings of the late 90s and early 2000s, the glory years. And you see, the Kings were first-round playoff exits 2 years in a row before they finally won a playoff series. After they won a playoff series, they then got swept by the Lakers in the second round. The following year, they made it all the way to the Western Conference Finals. But for two straight years, they lost to, I think, the Lakers and the Jazz in the first round of the playoffs before they actually won a playoff series.
Mm-hmm.
I know they missed the playoffs last year. That was year two to me. That was it. And the circumstances happened the way that they happened. You got hurt and whatever the case may be. But that can't be a lost year. That can't be a throwaway where you go, okay, just sacrifice that year, make the playoffs again, be a first round playoff again, exit again. And now we're back in the same exact situation we were two summers ago. Like that's not. I don't believe you have to constantly be moving upwards, but essentially treading water in the grand scheme of things for 2.5 seasons with a core of Fox and Sabonis and Keegan and now Jamar added to it. Not that those guys are tremendously old and their windows are closing or anything. I just think it opens the door to now the Kings really have to look around and go, can we afford to only tread water over 2 years when teams like OKC and Minnesota and other younger teams are knocking at the door ahead of them? And then you have teams like San Antonio and maybe even Houston who are biting at their heels behind them. I just don't think the Kings can feel good about making the playoffs and being a first-round playoff exit again. But, of course, circumstances are important.
Let me ask both of you guys another question, and Damien, you'll understand this as well. Once again, losing the first round, those concerns come up and those questions come up about Sabonis, about Fox, about Keegan Murray. Are the Kings in a situation where they're almost like football teams with young quarterbacks? What you going to do?
Well, I'll give you the question that I just wrote down. The scenarios if they miss the playoffs, right? Or if they lose in the first round of the playoffs. That's the scenario we've presented. Mm-hmm. What makes De'Aaron different than Dak?
The amount of that, I hear
because it's like because it's essentially what you it's essentially what you just asked. I just put a different name on it because I knew it would piss everybody off, mm-hmm. except for the Cowboy fans, or maybe it pisses the Cowboy fans off too. But the question with Dak, and we established this earlier in our brief Cowboys discussion, the question about Dak isn't if he's good. Mm-hmm. We know Dak is good. Like, that's not the question. Maybe he's talked about it as if he's, you know, number two to Patrick Mahomes at number one, but there's no question that Dak Prescott is a good quarterback.
Right.
The question with what's going on with CeeDee Lamb and what's going on with Micah Parsons is Dak Prescott the guy who will take an extremely expensive football team to the Super Bowl? Mm-hmm. And again, one first contract, I think. And, you know, there are a few guys who are, I know. Is De'Aaron a I think guy? And now you're at the point of Matt George talking about that super max contract. Now you better be at the I know part. Do you know that De'Aaron is the one? Mm-hmm. And if not, like in the situation that you guys presented, he's Dak Prescott in this situation.
Mm. I'll ask both of you guys. We kind of keep putting different caveats on the scenario, but I think Scooter brings up a good point. As they said, the difference will be Fox has carried a team in the playoffs. Dak has
carried the team where?
But remember what we talked about earlier with Dak. When they lose, Dak looks like crap.
No, that's fine. But he's carried the team where?
He hasn't carried them anywhere.
That's right. They haven't gone anywhere.
But the scenario would probably be we got to get something where this guy doesn't have to average 35 and still lose. We need to get him more help, or the combination of. I think Fox would be the last one, even though he's the one up for contract.
For the record, yes.
Yeah, but I think he'd be the last one. I think if he had the same type of series he had in a loss this year, I think they'd be looking around Fox to be like, all right, man, we got to find out what we need to get to work with him, because he's averaging 30-something a game in this series, and these other guys might have disappeared or something like that.
Matt?
Yeah, I think remove the caveats, remove the scenarios, and look at it for what it is. Over the course of 2 or 3 years, you essentially went nowhere. You took a step back, and then you got back. But now, like, the calendar keeps moving for all these guys, and the calendar keeps moving for the rest of the league as well. And this is a results-oriented league. If you win 50 games for the first time in God knows how long, we're feeling good about that number in Sacramento. But what the hell is it for if you get into the playoffs and then lose in the first round? And then again, you open up the door to questions about Fox, and then questions that Fox is asking about the team. But like what Kenny just said too, the logical response, if you're thinking 1 year at a time, is, okay, so Fox scored 35 in the playoffs, or averaged 35 in the playoffs, and the Kings still lost. Okay, we got to look around the surrounding product around him. That's the same thing we were talking about 2, 3, 4 years ago before the DeMontis Sabonis trade even happened. So again, remove all the specific context. You didn't go anywhere. You tried, and think it's a good thing that you tried, and it's a good thing that you actually broke that playoff drought, but I think at this point, the Sacramento Kings, when they're looking at the Western Conference, they have to start looking at this as a results-oriented situation. Now, we're not talking about the results of actually winning a championship, although Mike and Fox and all of them are going to talk about wanting to contend for a championship this year. That's not what we're asking. We're asking to win a playoff series, make it out of the first round. And when you have a group that is supposedly as talented as two all NBA type players in Fox and Sabonis in their primes right now, I think elite level 3-and-D wing in Keegan Murray, who should be the two-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year in Malik Monk, and now a six-time All-Star who, even though he's 35 years old, has showed zero signs of playing worse. In fact, has been playing better recently in his career. You take that group and you can't get past where you were in your first year of Fox, Sabonis, Keegan as a rookie, and Harrison Barnes. Like that's what I have to look at. That's the scenario where I go, I'm not going anywhere. And now my timeline feels shorter.
I was going to say real quick. So my thought is, and De'Aaron is probably perfect for the analogy because he's the one that you have the most control over what happens in the future, as far as like contractually, because he'll be up for a contract. Sabonis, you'd have to trade. Keegan, you'd have to trade. De'Aaron Fox is probably the one that's most relatable to an NFL quarterback because you wouldn't be able to trade him for another point guard. It's you either sign him or you don't, and you lose him.
Yep.
And in that case, you sign him. Like if the Kings lose in the first round and all this happens, and I'm not saying either one of you guys are saying anything different, but if it's looked at as a failure and you got to evaluate things, you're like, well, we'll sign De'Aaron to this max and then we'll evaluate after that.
Yep.
Like there's no question.
That's easy.
There's no question. You sign him, you bring him back, and you figure out maybe Keegan's on the trade. Maybe that Lauri Markkanen trade where we weren't willing to give up Keegan, maybe we're willing to give him up now because we haven't gotten anywhere. But if Fox wants to stay here, you sign him and you figure everything else out. And then maybe 2-3 years now, if you haven't progressed, then you look about moving him. But that's the one where it's like, all right, if you say, nah, Fox ain't it, well, what are you doing? Like, you think you're just going to draft
another one?
Yeah. Like you sign him and you figure everything else
100%.
out.
100%.
And can I say this as a caveat too? I'm speaking this way with the confidence in this feeling because, and maybe it's overly optimistic or maybe I'm have too much blind faith. I think this Kings roster is really freaking good. Mm-hmm. Like I think this Kings team is going to be incredibly good this season. Mm-hmm. I think this Kings team is going to play so well and draw so much attention that people are going to come up with their criticisms because it's the Sacramento Kings and they try really hard to find a way to undermine every opportunity they freaking get. But beyond that, like I think this Kings team is going to be so good and so dynamic that if they look that way and then get to the postseason, regardless of the circumstances, and then they struggle again, you're either talking a failure or a disappointment or a waste. Like it falls into three categories, and all three categories open the door to tough decisions that have to be made. And the best case scenario, the ideal scenario, what Monty McNair is looking for here is for this core that he's now set here, this core five plus Herter and Trey Lyles and whatever, he's looking for this team to give him the context that he needs to spend the rest of his assets. That's what he's looking for. He's looking for the green light. And I don't know if he needs it in a winning a playoff series and then adding on to that later, or maybe he needs the first 50 games of this season to see how good this team is. And then he's willing at the trade deadline to go all in. Monty McNair has a lot of his chips already in the pot, but he hasn't gone all in yet. And if this team can't get past where they were 2 years ago, now he's going to be even more hesitant to go all in because at that point it goes from tactical to desperate, I think. And that's a position that I don't think Monty ever wants to be in and is comfortable in. He's shown that he's more than willing to be patient. He's more than willing to keep an eye out for the right moves while staying flexible. But if this Kings team still can't get it done, now the desperate becomes, hey, maybe we got to include Keegan Murray. Maybe we got to give up on Domantas Sabonis. And now you're caught talking about completely changing this team and sort of admitting that what you've done in the past wasn't right. It was the wrong move. It hasn't worked. And then bigger questions are starting to be asked from Kings ownership.
Well, at some point, those questions will be asked. Like it happens with every franchise. Just the hope is it's no time soon.
All right.
Right. And that's the other thing. Like, we're having fun with this conversation because it's August 1st and there is no Kings game in sight. And I don't know what else to tell you about Boogie Ellis. So we create these conversations that are what ifs, what ifs, what ifs. And they're very generic. They're very generic conversations because they make for fun content. They spark conversations and they get good ideas flowing and all that different stuff. But I think the number one thing we were trying to point out earlier, and we got a great example from our man Kyle in the Chatty House, brought to you by Matthew's Mattress, that the story is important. Like, losing in the first round on the surface, yeah, that sucks. What's the story of the season, the playoff series, and how do we get to that loss? A 4-5, grueling 7-game series is different than a 3-6 and you're swept at home. You know, being a 50-plus win team and going out in a whimper, yeah, that's tough. But there's going to be stories to the season. There's going to be stories to the conference. There's going to be stories to each individual team. And there's going to be stories to Sacramento. Sacramento's story last year, to me, Matt, felt like they couldn't. You know, we point to the last month of the season with Herter and Malik Monk, and it's perfectly fair. But the reality was they were struggling all year, and it felt like they were struggling to find something. They got a little bit better defensively, I don't want to shortchange them. They got a lot better defensively in the second part of the year, but they still weren't that offense that we saw last year. We never saw Kevin Herter get going before his injury. There's a story to last year's season that just felt clunky. And to me, it really comes down to something as simple. If you eliminate that clunkiness, Casey's 100% right. This is a 50-plus win team. It's just, what's your story? And that is the thing when we create these scenarios that we don't know.
Yeah, and maybe D'Lo, I'm just being too stubborn with this because
probably,
you know, I'm feeling like the story doesn't really matter. Like, because the result is what matters to me. And so, like, give me a scenario where the Kings make the playoffs, are eliminated in the first round, and maybe you're feeling good, but are you feeling good because of the result, or are you feeling good because it feels like a consolation prize? Like, even let's use an injury scenario, for example. Let's say the Kings get banged up at the end of the season again. They make it through the play-in, make it to the first round, and De'Aaron Fox and DeMar DeRozan can't carry a Sabonis-less, knock on wood, or Keegan Murray-less Sacramento Kings team to a first-round playoff victory over the second-seed Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, I get that, but again, I don't think I'm talking about, well, they tried, or I don't think I'm feeling good about that. Now I'm talking about, God, another lost season. Like, now this is a season that has gone by that it didn't matter. And now you're expected to, so like the injury excuse doesn't matter to me. None of these excuses matter.
No, you're right.
In the series or don't.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And we brought that up earlier in the discussion is like, yeah, there's stories and there's framing to all of this, but in reality, it's another year with Fox. It's another year with Sabonis. And at this point, because of the structure of the contract, you really got 1 year left with DeMar. So where are you going? And we talked about building blocks and what do you have? And I think you talked about this a minute ago, Matt. You used the term assets. Like, what assets do you have to finally, okay, the season gets started. You know, we got to pull the trigger on that Rob Williams deal. How do we make that happen? We're really lacking in this department. Or, you know, so-and-so is available or this is available. Those are things that you have to figure out, but you've got to figure them out pretty quickly. Because the idea of Ingram, and I kind of believe the idea of Kuzma, all that stuff, I don't think that's realistic. You're talking Rob Williams, right? You're talking about, more specifically, less than players. Maybe you're talking about teams like Portland. You're talking about teams like Washington. You're talking about teams like Detroit. Like, what exactly are you guys doing? Charlotte, what are you doing? Because you got a guy over there. That guy could really help us. Here, take a second-round pick and whatever else we offer you. And you kind of move from there. But to your point, Matt, like, and I understand that it is another year, and this is where the Portland Trail Blazers scenario comes back in. The Blazers kept making the playoffs, won some series, lost some series, but were never a threat to win a championship. They never took a step forward where it's like, watch out for those Trail Blazers. It was like, nah, Dame might be really fun in the playoffs, but they'll be eliminated at some point. Like, that is the reality of, you know, the Sacramento Kings might face that reality. We're just not used to it because they went so damn long without making the playoffs.
I appreciate you guys for so many different reasons, and a chief of them being you helped me formulate thoughts for what could end up being a podcast episode. And I think it kind of dawned on me, like, there's a question that the Kings need to have a confident answer to. There's a number of them, but there's one overarching question that I think Monty McNair needs to have a confident answer to by the end of this season. Am I confident going all in with this group, or am I not? That is the question he has to have a confident answer to. And to me, the real only way that he has the confidence to say yes, 100%, is if this team wins a playoff series. Like, that's where I feel like this group's at. If they're a first-round playoff exit, I still think there's some hesitations. There's some doubts with somebody or multiple somebodies to which you're not ready to go all in at that point. Or you're going all in more off of blind faith than you are in confidence, which just is not Monty's bag.
And then that's when we go to the scenario where there's levels, or there's a checklist. When you go down to, if you're not comfortable with this team, going all in with this team, all right, let me go down the checklist. To me, not saying I want this to happen, but the way it should go is you field calls for Keegan Murray. And you see what you can get.
But we all know how much you dislike.
I love Keegan Murray.
Matt George disagrees.
I love Keegan Murray. But, I mean, some would say the first thing would be Sabonis. I disagree.
I don't think anybody, I feel like, well, yeah, I can think of a friend of ours who, yeah, you're right.
I disagree, but some would say that would be the move.
I just don't know how you don't start with Fox, though, in that situation.
Well, because
if you go Keegan, to me, you're building on Fox and Sabonis, and your idea is Fox and Sabonis are still the 1-2 that can do it.
Yeah.
That's my thinking.
The reason why you don't go, to me, you don't go with Fox because you can't replace him necessarily. Unless you're trading them because it's...
But what are you trying to accomplish?
Trying to get better, right? You're trying to go to a championship.
I think there's only one... Well, never mind.
Who do you hate? Who do you hate?
Well, if you're trying to get better, we're talking like now. Like right now. And you throw caution to the wind. It's Keegan.
And that's all in.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
Keegan, if you're not going all in.
And you better be certain...
Exactly.
Like 110% certain that this is the move.
Mm-hmm.
This is a championship caliber move.
Yep.
So imagine if the Sacramento Kings are a first round playoff exit and Monty is put at a crossroads this upcoming offseason where it's trade Keegan for one last swing out of kind of desperation, or hold on to Keegan and use my assets in addition to that to add on to this group because I have the confidence that one more piece with my boatload of draft picks and maybe throw in a Kevin Huerter, whatever. Like, that's the route that obviously Monty is going to prefer to go, and that's going to be the crossroads that Monty's going to find himself at. Because if you're not making an all-in move, you're selling, right? If you don't think that you can get it done with this core of Fox and Sabonis and you're trying to move on from one of them, the likelihood of you trading DeMontis Sabonis and getting a just as good / better player is pretty low. At that point, you're probably trading DeMontis Sabonis away for draft picks and kind of a soft reset in the best case scenario. So you need to be put in a position. You need to put yourself in a position where I feel confident going all in with this group. And to me, the only way to do that is actually get a playoff series under your belt.
I absolutely lost track of time. I have like four more things written down, and Jesse's making us end the show.
Well, just put them in the rundown.
Thank you guys so much for being with us today. We'll see you back here. Make sure you're subscribed to the Locked On Kings podcast and check out Matt's great work over there at ABC 10. And we will see you guys tomorrow at 10 a.m., beginning with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Land Park.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.